Thank you very much. No man could ask for a better introduction and a warmer welcome on this very cold night. It's probably not cold for you, but it's very cold for me. Brothers, sisters, comrades and friends, wassalamu alaikum, peace be with all of you. And my thanks, first of all, to the people of this beautiful Christian church who have given over this space as part of their commitment to the justice and equity of which Ali spoke, making clear once again that whatever else is clashing in this world, this is not a clash between Christianity and the Muslims. I've just come from a TV studio, The Hour, I think it's called. You can see it at 11 o'clock if you're home. That's why I'm still wearing makeup. I wouldn't like you to think that I... Well, I'll not go there. Okay, but I'll be speaking much louder later. I warm up. And the host of the show, George, young man, smart, I think he's probably on our side. We talked about Christianity and Islam. I told him, don't make the mistake of imagining that George W. Bush and Tony Blair are Christians. They blaspheme against the very idea of Jesus Christ with every policy that they pursue. Religious people, and I'm one myself, believe in the prophets, peace be upon them. Bush believes in the prophets and how to get a piece of them. We're very grateful for the hospitality given us by the church this evening, which is in action the kind of unity that we are seeking to build. Now, something I said at a press breakfast in Ottawa this morning seems to have captured the news, so much so that at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning on my way to the airport, I have to go to Canadian television to make a television interview about it. They seem to be very offended that I described Canadian foreign policy under Mr. Harper as absurd. Let me tell you why I think it's absurd. It's absurd to say that you're fighting for democracy in Afghanistan when you were the first government in the entire world to punish the Palestinian people with starvation because they voted for a party of which your government did not approve in the Palestinian election. That's absurd to me. It's absurd to me that Canada should wish to throw away the reputation that it had in the world, a reputation which only a few short years ago was everywhere recognized. Canada had, as I put it on television tonight, a baby face. It was seen as a country that was for peace and for development. And while other countries strode out across the world, subjugating people, Canada was seen as a country that was more concerned with helping people. That was just a few short years ago. And I must tell you, I do not understand why Canada would want to join the ranks of the hated in the world. It's not in your interest, believe me, to be hated in the world. I speak as a citizen of a country which is one of the three most hated countries in the world. But when Canada, when Mr. Harper announced the beginning of a siege of the Palestinian people, who are now, and I'm not exaggerating, eating from the garbage heaps in Gaza, one of the poorest places on earth, where 75% of the people are living on less than one Canadian dollar a day. When you announce a siege on such a people, this is a declaration of war against the Palestinian people. And I don't know why your country did that. It's absurd that the Canadian Prime Minister should be weighing up whether or not he's prepared to speak to the President of China, the most populous country in the world. It's absurd to think, as they appear to do, that Canada has anything to say to the government of North Korea when Canada is seen increasingly as the indissoluble ally of George W. Bush, who's making war throughout the world and who's in possession of 30,000 nuclear weapons pointed in all directions. It's absurd. It's absurd to think that by sending soldiers to kill people in Afghanistan, they keep telling me, these news interviewers, no, no, they're killing Taliban. How do you know they're Taliban? They got a membership card in their pocket. And Taliban kill me. I say to these reporters, who are increasingly young, so it's difficult to make this point, but I ask them to go and look it up. Every day during the Vietnam War, the American media would report the US Army's declaration that today they killed 100, 500, 900 Viet Cong. They weren't Viet Cong. They were just Vietnamese. And they're not Taliban. They're just Afghans that your soldiers and my soldiers are killing. You've killed a lot of Afghans, and the Afghans are starting to kill a lot of you, and you're making people hate you as a result. That, Mr. Harper, is an absurd foreign policy. That's my honest opinion as someone coming, you know, the Toronto Star, I think it was, on Friday or Saturday, they had a long article explaining that Johnny Foreigner, the non-Anglo-Saxon, was not shouldering sufficient of the burden. You'll remember that phrase, some of you. Empire used to be described as the white man's burden, the white Anglo-Saxon imperialist burden. According to the Toronto Star writer, Canada, the United States, and Britain are doing 90% of the dying. They're also doing 90% of the killing. Now, there's two ways of looking at this. You could look at it and say that Johnny, non-Anglo-Saxon foreigner, doesn't have the moral fiber to do the killing. Or you could ask yourself, maybe they know something that we don't know. Maybe they're the sensible ones with a proper foreign policy, and maybe it's the Anglo-Saxon terrible trio that's got it wrong. That's my take, and that's what I'll be saying on television tomorrow. But of course, it's not just that you're killing Afghans. By killing Afghans, you're relieving American soldiers to go to Iraq and kill Iraqis. And don't think that nobody has noticed. Don't think the Palestinians didn't know that it was your government who were the first to turn off the taps to try and starve them and punish them. Don't think the Muslim world doesn't know just how gung-ho a member of the coalition of the killing the Harper government is. Now, listen to this. Foreign policy is beginning to dictate the outcome of elections in powerful Western countries. Mr. Blair will be going soon, very soon. Remember, you heard it here, very, very soon. And he's not going because of the economy. The British economy is doing quite well for most people. He's not doing because of the state of the public services. The public services are better now than what they were when he came to office. Mr. Blair is losing power in Downing Street very soon for one reason only, and that's his foreign policy infatuation with the George W. Bush government. Bush himself was given the mother of all beatings 2 weeks ago in the midterm elections, and not for any other reason than his foreign policy. Mr. Aznar in Spain is out because of his foreign policy. Mr. Berlusconi in Italy is out because of his foreign policy. Let's make sure in the next few months Stephen Harper is out because of his foreign policy. Tell you something else that's absurd. It's absurd that you've got an opposition party that wasn't losing any sleep over massacres of civilians in Lebanon who declared that we will not mention the C word. Oh no, it wasn't the government, no. It's the opposition that wasn't losing any sleep. It was the opposition that wouldn't call for a ceasefire. For me, Harper and the Liberals are two cheeks of the same arse. I know about that, because we have such a system. We've got three parties, Tweedledee, Tweedledum, Tweedledee and a half. If it were anatomically possible, there would be three cheeks of the same arse. I don't know about elsewhere in this country, but it seems to me, in this area, the only party worth its salt is the NDP, and I hope that they get the results they deserve at the election. Now let me start. You thought I'd started, but I'm only warming up. Let me start with talking about what I'm not going to be talking about, if that doesn't sound too Donald Rumsfeld-ish. Wasn't it wonderful to see him go 2 weeks ago? I'm not going to be attacking the people of the United States of America. I am the great-grandson of probably the only woman in the entire 19th century who emigrated from America to Scotland when thousands were going in the opposite direction. I think she got on the wrong boat, and that's what happened. It's very important that we make it clear that in our attacks upon the policy of the United States, that not only are we not attacking the people of the United States, we salute them for finding their way through the fog of war propaganda and Fox News to the truth which delivered that beating to Bush and the neocons just 2 weeks ago. And I always have to be careful because I never know which Americans are going to be in the audience. A couple of weeks ago, I was speaking at the London School of Economics, and I made my usual gag that I didn't mind having a special relationship with the United States of America. I just didn't want a special relationship like the one Miss Lewinsky had with President Bill Clinton. If we weren't in a church, I'd pursue that metaphor further. But a young man put his hand up at the back of the hall and asked me if this wasn't a little ungallant, as not only was Miss Lewinsky a student at the London School of Economics, she was sitting in row 17 of that very meeting. So I did what few politicians do. I made a swift, unqualified, and I hope gracious apology and promised Monica I would never tell that gag again. Another pre-election promise broken. The second thing I'm not going to be talking about is badly about the armed forces of your country, my country, or the United States of America. I often am greeted, I'm not sure if greeted is the word, by protesters outside meetings like this who hold up placards that say, "We support our troops." Well, it's a funny way to support your troops, sending them to get killed for a pack of lies, for a pack of liars. We're the ones who support our troops. We're the ones who want to support our troops by bringing them home for Christmas and keeping them here in our own country to defend us. The troops are lions led by donkeys, like Harper, like Blair, like Bush, like Howard in Australia. People who've never heard a shot fired and anger themselves. People who are not sending their own sons to kill and be killed. None of these columnists and broadcasters are queuing up at the army recruiting offices themselves, picking up their own tin hats and their own guns. They send other people's sons off to war. They're chicken hawks, ready to fight to the last drop of somebody else's blood for exploitation and domination around the world. The third thing I'm not going to be talking about, and this is important to say in North America more than anywhere else, because here there is still a gigantic taboo about what I'm going to be talking about tonight, where people are routinely intimidated into silence, into forswearing to tell the truth. But when I attack Israel this evening, and when I attack Zionism this evening, none of it should be confused with the foul strain of racism called anti-Semitism. Nothing that we say is against Jewish people. thousands of Jewish people in our movement. You don't have to be a Zionist because you're a Jew. And you don't even have to like Jews to be a Zionist. Anybody who thinks George Bush and the Christian evangelical Bible-belting hypocrites of the Christian right in the United States like Jews have obviously never visited their golf clubs, have never visited their country clubs. This is a very important distinction to make. Nothing that we stand for implies any hatred or animus towards Jews. It's Israel and its policies of oppression and aggression and violence that we hate, not Jews. Now I want to start with that point because it's the heart of the matter. It is the flaw at the heart of Western policy towards the East. It's the biggest source of hatred and bitterness in the Muslim world about us, about our injustice, about our double standards, which are clearer and clearer for all to see. I gave an interview during the Lebanon War, early on a Sunday morning, hardly anybody saw it, on Sky News, which then went round the world. Thanks to the internet. As you've just shown me, millions of people have seen this interview now, tens of millions in fact, thanks to the wonders of the new age that we live in, with the internet, about which I want to say more later. But the exchange was memorable for a number of things, quite unexpectedly. When I went into the studio, I had no idea that this would be anything other than a normal television interview, of which I do several every day. But I was particularly angry. My interviewer was particularly stupid. And some particularly dramatic things were happening on the other half of the split screen whilst I was speaking. But it was memorable most for this. This interviewer, and she is not alone, knew the name, the full name, the rank, and probably the serial number of all the Israeli soldiers she said had been, and I quote, kidnapped in Gaza and in Lebanon over the preceding few weeks. But when I challenged her to name one, just one, of the thousands of Palestinian and Lebanese victims who had fallen in the same period, she was completely dumbstruck, unable to give me a single name. And that shows the double standard. You see, Israelis have always got names. Americans, Canadians, British people have always got names. We hold 2 minutes silence for them. We erect memorials for them. We mourn them as we should. But we don't even count, never mind naming, the victims of the others. That's the truth of it. The blood of some people in this world is more valuable than the blood of others. And that's the shame. That's the real shame in this world. When Mrs. Blair and Mrs. Bush gave a simultaneous radio cast on the anniversary of 9/11, a synchronized swimming in the grief of that anniversary, it's bad enough that their husbands are in bed with each other. When their wives join them, it becomes positively obscene. and they asked us never to forget the heartbreaking messages of farewell left by those poor American women on those planes on 9/11, from their mobile telephones on the answering machines of their families, as if we could forget them. But as I said in Parliament afterwards, just because Afghan women don't have mobile telephones and Iraqi women don't have answering machines, it doesn't make their deaths any less obscene than the death of those American women on those planes on 9/11.